Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Is technology a blessing or a curse? Does it run our lives, or do we use it constructively to make our lives easier? And can we have both? That is, can we strike a balance? Joining us today to talk about the connect and disconnect of modern communications technology is journalist, media critic, and author William Powers. In his book, the New York Times bestselling Hamlet's BlackBerry, A Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age, he focuses on how technology has become a part of the very fabric of our lives every day and how we can get control of that. Welcome back to the show, Bill.
Thank you, Ann. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So since we last spoke, your book has become a New York Times bestseller.
Yes, I was very happy about that. You know, I sort of thought I was out on a limb questioning the way we're dealing with these wonderful new technologies. But I think it turns out a lot of people were having the same thought, and I had kind of the luck of timing.
But something you didn't just talk about it, you wove it into not only the fabric of our lives today, but how the same issue has come up many times over history, all the way back to, as what you spoke about in Chapter 5 regarding Plato and Socrates and Socrates' ambivalence about the newest technology of the time.
Yes, you know, this happens in every age, what we're going through now. People convince themselves that these changes have never happened before. It's completely new. What are we going to do? We're in uncharted territory, et cetera. And it really turns out to be not the case. You know, human beings, basically, first of all, have always been human beings. We're very similar to the Greeks, even though our world looks quite different from theirs, the ancient Greeks. And in addition, whenever a new technology comes along that shakes up the world and fills it with new information and draws people closer together in all these ways we're seeing today, it presents these same challenges, wonderful, amazing upsides, and some risks and downsides. And you kind of have to figure out how to proceed and how to be smart about it. And that's really what my book is about, helping people figure that out.
How did you decide that a book like Hamlet's BlackBerry was needed?
I really began, I think, as many books do, the books that I love tend to come from a place deep inside the author, and you can sense that from the first page.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, it was not just deep inside me, but deep inside my own life, my family life, my work life. I really was using these technologies, digital technologies, very heavily from the beginning. I was at the Washington Post as a reporter and media critic, and so I was writing about this new world. And I was enjoying it tremendously, but as the years went by and I got more connected and dial-up, went to broadband, went to wireless, and suddenly I was connected to everyone everywhere I went, I began to feel it increasingly as a burden. And I began to worry that in all these dimensions of my life, including my family relationships, it was beginning to take away things, even as it added things. And I felt this balance tipping. And I wondered, is it taking away more than it's adding? We had something that was happening in my family that I started to call the vanishing family trick, where we would gather in the living room after dinner for family time. And one by one, we would all disappear on some flimsy excuse. I have to get a glass of water. I have to go to the bathroom. And, of course, you know where we were going. We were all going to our computer screens and abandoning each other, essentially, for something that is absolutely a good thing. I mean, we love having these screens. We love all they bring. But we were losing something at the same time. So I realized we needed to strike a new balance, I thought, as individuals and as a society, and that given my background in this area, I might be the person to write the book about it.
What do you think was the tipping point?
For me or for
society?
Well, I think there have been so many. It's hard to identify one. I mean, in terms of the technology itself, what brought us to the place where we needed to really ask this question, I think the most important change was wireless broadband, the idea that you could be anywhere and have high-speed connection to millions, even billions, I think at this point, billions of people. And that they could just reach out. At the beginning of the book, I use a metaphor. It's like anyone in the world can reach out and tap you on the shoulder. And that's a mm-hmm. fundamentally different way to move through your day, your work day, your relationship day, everything you do. It's fundamentally different when someone can interrupt you at any moment and distract you, offer you something fascinating, offer you something you don't want to hear about because it's related to some burden you've got. It's as if we're walking around all day surrounded by a crowd. And life in a crowd is different from life apart from the crowd. And one of the things I argue in the book is that having gotten to that tipping point, we now need to think again about how we manage crowd life, which really is something human beings have been doing since the beginning of time, because there have always been crowds. This happens to be the digital crowd.
It's a relative term as well.
Yes, it's a relative term. There are different sizes of crowds. Crowds have different personalities. You know, this was a concern that came up in the 1950s when the world was getting more crowded and people were worried about world wars. Is there going to be a third world war, nuclear Armageddon, all these things? All kinds of books came out about crowds. How do crowds influence our thinking? What's it like to live in a crowd? And I'm trying to revive that concern in a whole new way for the digital age. This is a new kind of crowd. And we need to have smart strategies so we can be happy living within this crowd, because it's not going to go away, and we can't run away from it. We can't go off to the woods and just be hermits, because that's no way to live.
My guest is William Powers, author of Hamlet's Blackberry, A Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. If you have a question or comment for Bill, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Have you been able to separate yourself from the technology that binds you? Give us a call and tell us how you do that, 614-292-8513. So you're not a proponent of just getting rid of the BlackBerry or getting rid of Facebook.
No, I think that these tools are wonderful and full of promise, and I use many of them. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I have a mobile phone like everybody. But I do think that we all should begin thinking more thoughtfully about which tools serve our individual needs, because I don't think every tool is for everyone. And then once you've got the tools, what should each one be doing for you, and how should you use it? How can you use it most effectively? So if you have Facebook, for example, which I've been on for years, is it wise to be checking Facebook 50 times a day and updating constantly about everything you do? You know, I'm eating a cheeseburger. I'm going to put that on Facebook now, tell all my friends I'm eating a cheeseburger. Is that a good way to use Facebook? Is that useful to anyone? Is it useful to be uploading photos all through the day of everything that happens to you on Facebook, and therefore adding that to everybody else's stream of what they're having to follow? These kinds of questions are beginning to kind of present themselves in everybody's lives, I think, as we realize that these technologies are not just powerful but somewhat addictive. And like any addiction, it needs to be reined in so that we can really use them to their best advantage. So, no, I have these technologies all through my day, but I also, as I recount in the book in great detail, my family and I have started to sort of design our lives so that we move in and out of the digital realm with some regularity and have breaks, have what I call gaps between ourselves and all that digital stuff, because I think these gaps are essential.
You know, the people who do the instant updates, now, every once in a while, I don't have the connectivity to my phone, which I'm glad.
Yeah, I don't either.
I've had it before, and I got rid of it. But every once in a while, I'm someplace, and it would be fun or edifying. There'd be something I'd want to say, but I don't, and I can't. But there are people who do these instant updates on their lives, the I'm eating a hamburger thing. What is it that drives them? What's going on there? Is that an addiction issue, or what's going on?
it's also a personality and a temperament issue. We're all different. And that's one of the beautiful things about being a person. We're not all the same. Mm-hmm. I think there are people who are simply more social, more gregarious. There are people who are more into sharing everything that happens to them. There have always been those kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And I think we all fall somewhere on a very, very long continuum on this question. And the social media in particular have really been appealing to a certain kind of person who loves to share, which is, as I say, a beautiful thing. I mean, I want to share my life with all these people, and I want them to share with me. But there's a new way in which, as people did in small towns 100 years ago when you were constantly running into people on Main Street, there is a way in which you have to start thinking about how much of yourself you want to share, how much that other person wants to hear, and how much, to what degree is sharing good for the relationship and really for the community you're a part of. it's, you know, more and more and more is not necessarily better. Sometimes less is more when it comes to sharing. Sometimes being selective mm-hmm. is better than just throwing everything out there, because who has time for that on the most practical level? So these questions, what I'm trying to emphasize is that they have been with us before. This is just a new version of really what are ancient questions. And the beauty of that, I find great solace in that as I wrestle with this. But I also think it's wonderful because there are centuries of experience that we can draw on. People have been thinking about this in slightly different ways from the beginning of society, and we can learn lessons from what they've been through.
Susan from Eastmoor, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. This is a great program. I appreciate you having it. And I'm looking forward to reading your book and actually feeling the paper in my fingers and not doing it on a Kindle or a Nook.
I love that.
But I want to say, you know, technology has definitely been a blessing for me, and that's how I earn my living. But at the same time, I worry about so many things. First and foremost is that people don't know how to do things without it these days. I got caught without internet access the other day due to a brownout, and then all of a sudden, how can I work? I can't get my information to people that I need to get to them, and they don't have that problem where they are, and they're expecting me to be right there immediate and be able to get it to them. And I worry for my children too, but one of the biggest things that I'm afraid of for most of my children, and I think I saw this quote in Information Week a few years ago, is people just put so much information out there, and once it's out there, it's permanent. So, you know, never write what you can say and never say when you can nod. I try to teach that to my children, and they just don't get it. You know, they'll put whatever they want on their Facebook, and a friend of mine was just telling my son last night, you know, people are watching what you're writing. The coaches and the colleges that you're applying to are looking at your Facebook. They're looking at what you're doing, who you're talking to, what kinds of things you're posting. And people don't realize that it's out there. You can't bring it back. And to me, the ability to just shut down and turn off, I'm Jewish and I keep the Sabbath, so that is my saving grace, that everybody knows they can't reach me unless they want to come and knock on my door or I see them out between Friday night and Saturday night. And I tell everybody that. Everything's shut down. You aren't going to get me. And it is, once I started doing that, it has been the saving grace of everything that I do, because finally I can slow down and I don't have to think about everything that's going on around me. And it doesn't matter that, you know, everything can wait 25 hours. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But the key with the technology today is just that it's moving so quickly that even now, when it used to be you could get on an airplane and get away from your email. Well, now the airplanes are wired. So everybody expects you to always be available, and it's just, I think, just horrible. I'm looking forward to retirement and shutting down.
Well, thanks for that comment, Susan.
You're
Bill?
Welcome.
Yeah, fantastic comment, Susan. Thank you. My book, really, it's amazing how you have all these parallels to things that I write about. I write about something my family does that we call the Internet Sabbath. That's one of the chapters. And it's really going offline on the weekends, which we're into our fourth year of it now. And it's revolutionized our lives, just as your Sabbath is doing for you. It's a wonderful tool in the digital age. And in our case, it's not even religious. It's just about technology. The airplane issue, I write about that, and what a loss it was in many ways, that final space that we really couldn't connect within has effectively been taken away from us. Although I do often still find myself on flights where I can't get digital, and I do find that to be kind of a relief. I loved also Susan's comment at the top of her remarks about people feeling that they can't really work anymore, or feeling kind of helpless mm-hmm. without the connection when we have a brownout or a blackout. And that gets to something else I discuss in the book, which is there's a certain way in which these technologies are kind of infantilizing us, making us dependent in a way that I think human beings shouldn't be dependent. We are naturally resourceful. That's really one of our best qualities. We're creative. And when you're going all day tethered to this kind of mommy thing that the screen has become, I think it takes away a lot of your ability to think for yourself and do for yourself, and that's a great loss. And as she said, with children, I think it's especially important that we reinforce with kids you've got a lot going on for yourself right inside your own mind, and you can do things on your own without that little device you've got in your hand.
We have to take a break. Thank you, Susan, for your comment. We have to take a break. We'll return in a few minutes with William Powers, author of Hamlet's Blackberry, A Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. So stay tuned. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Some states in dire financial straits want to restrict collective bargaining for public employees. In Wisconsin, teachers protested. I'm Neil Conan. Public employees and state shortfalls, plus the Oscar-nominated documentary Wasteland, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins this afternoon at 2 o'clock right here on 89.7 NPR News. Currently 35 degrees in downtown Columbus. Rain today and temperatures falling throughout the day. Expect some rain mixing with freezing rain and sleet tonight. A low of 24 degrees.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Ohio State's Comprehensive Cancer Center, rated exceptional by the National Cancer Institute. More information about Ohio State's Comprehensive Cancer Center is at cancer.osu.edu.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is William Powers. He's the author of Hamlet's Blackberry, A Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. Questions or comments for Bill? What do you do to shut it all out of your life when you want to take a break? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And dare I say, you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, too, if you'd like, if that is your modus operandi. I wanted to get back to the idea of infantilizing us because it reminded me of the fear that Socrates had, as you relate it in Chapter 5. The idea, he thought that the new technology at that time was the written word. And he was afraid that if people got too far away from the oral tradition that had marked learning up until that point, that people wouldn't be as smart, they wouldn't be as quick-minded. It would weaken them.
Yes. It's almost hard for us to imagine, and that there was a time when people viewed writing and the alphabet the way we view the smartphone, essentially, as this newfangled technology that had come into their lives and was a question mark for them, but it really was for the ancient Greeks. In Socrates and Plato's lifetime, the alphabet was really just taking off for the first time. It had been around for quite some time, but it was taking off in everyday life, and books had appeared for the first time, and people were really using books for the purposes we use them today. And Socrates was from the older generation. He was very, very dubious about this alphabet concept. He was very much in the oral tradition, where everything good in life, everything good in communication comes out of speaking to each other. In fact, that's where the Socratic method comes from that we use in law schools today. Mm-hmm. He believed that's where you use your mind best, when you're in a live exchange with another person trying to reach some truth. So that's a wonderful approach. But of course, as we know today, he didn't see that writing has this potential of its own to help us be creative and take us to a new place. He worried that writing freezes the idea on the page, and therefore it can't grow in some new direction. But of course, what we've discovered is that, and Plato, his student, discovered, because as we know, he wrote these dialogues down, what we've discovered is that when you read something, there's a creative process that happens inside your own head that takes it to a new place. And then you can come up with a new idea and write something fresh. And of course, wonderfully, digital technologies allow us to do that in a whole new way by having these exchanges right online with people across the planet. So it's this long story of this same question coming back over and over again, and we're going through it again, and I think that makes it kind of exciting. It's part of being a person.
Matt from Columbus, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Yes, I was going to comment about how chat rooms used to be built into our houses. If you drive into older neighborhoods, you'll see porches with essentially two front doors where guests would be let into the parlor to visit, then you could have another guest in another parlor, much the way you can divide your chat room online. And one other little comment about the point just made, one of the things about writing is the immortality that it gives to thought, something I'm not sure we're going to see so much in the decades when on the Internet, although it certainly seems like it lasts a long time.
Thank you for the comment, Matt. The chat room comment that you made is fascinating because it really does get to an aspect of home life, which I have a whole chapter about in the book, that people have, I think, lost track of in the digital age, which is the importance of zoning your own home. So there are spaces for togetherness and gregarious sort of conversational behavior, spaces for solitude, spaces for being loud, spaces for being quiet. This is something that goes way, way back to the early days of really domestic design when people were first having houses at all. And as you suggest, it went right into the 20th century with front porches and multiple doors and so forth. I think we're not thinking about that in our homes today, and this notion that every room should be connected and we can be using our smartphones everywhere in the home, and isn't that wonderful? I really question that. And I think we need to go back to this notion of zoning the very spaces where we live so we have different kinds of activities in different places and can use our connectedness in some and be apart from others in others. And then the second point about writing being immortal, I wasn't completely sure what you were getting at there. I heard a suggestion that possibly the writing we're doing today won't endure because it's more superficial in the digital medium. And my response to that would be, I think that's true so far. But as with all technologies, I think as we get better at using this one and master this notion of writing on a screen, you're going to see people producing the equivalent of War and Peace and even the Odyssey on the electronic medium, because that's what people do. They get better at using the tools that they come up with.
Matt?
I suppose all the paper from the ancients did not survive, and we only have kept the best pieces.
I think that's true. Yes, a lot was lost.
And so perhaps I take your point about that there is much about eating burgers that may go the way of
exactly.
And deservedly so.
Exactly.
Thank
I mean,
you.
What happens? Thank you, Matt. What happens is that we go to the screen in the morning and we see something inane that someone has written or posted or that comes across our Twitter feed. And we say to ourselves, oh, this is the nature of life in my time. People are just trading inanities. But in fact, people are also trading wise thoughts and incredibly useful thoughts and sentences and paragraphs that will be quoted hundreds of years from now. But they're the exception. It's always that way. The best stuff is rare. And when you're watching your Twitter feed every day, you have to keep an eye out for that great stuff and maybe even print it out. That's what I do.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
614-292-8513. You can call that number and speak with my guest, William Powers. He's author of Hamlet's Blackberry, A Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your comment, your question there. At the front of the book, Bill, you quote Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said that this time, like to all times, is a very good time if we but know what to do with it. And for some reason, that made me think of the revolution in Egypt and how social media helped trigger that uprising. And the benefits of social media, such as they are, something that's incredible if you even look back 25 or 30 years, which was when Egypt was very closely controlled.
Yes. In fact, I have a very personal reason for paying really close attention to that one, because in a previous life, before I became a writer, I actually worked in foreign relations in the U.S. Senate and once had a sit-down with Mubarak in his office in Cairo.
Wow.
And it struck me all these years. It was amazing he was still there. I kept saying this was the late 80s. Mm-hmm. I was in my 20s. And astonishing, you know, the endurance of this man, and then they had all these election fraud accusations and so forth, and it did really seem like this is a person who's not managing his power as wisely as he might. And lo and behold, these very technologies that we're talking about have played an enormous role, it seems, in bringing him down and possibly bringing something new and better to that country. We don't know where this is all heading, of course. It feels very dicey right now. But there's no question that people communicating with each other in these new ways in pursuit of freedom is a good, has to be a good thing in the big picture. And it goes right to Emerson's quote that it's true. I believe it's really true. I mean, it's a classic optimist take on the world. I'm an optimist. But this notion that this time, like all times, is a very good one if we know what to do with it. I think that goes for any time you can live in, you live in. It's all about how we people alive today handle the world we live in, the challenges we're given, and the tools that are placed in our hands. And when we have these tools and we're using them to promote something like freedom and a free society, that's got to be a good thing in the long run.
Usually when there's something like that, whether it's the written word, which of course was controlled and has been controlled off and on for many years all over the place, whether it was the church or governments in the United States, in the early days when slavery was illegal, they didn't teach the slaves to read. Mm-hmm. They've tried to control the social media,
right,
as well.
Right, and in fact, we're having a lot of interesting debates about this today because, as you probably know, in a whole other dimension of kind of national security and safety, there are new proposals that we in the U.S. should have an internet off switch that we could use in case we were attacked and so forth, and it might be useful to us to shut down. And, of course, all the freedom advocates have mm-hmm. risen up and said, wait a minute, we don't want to have what Mubarak had, it seems. And so we really are wrestling with this. I think it is a medium that is very hard for people in an authoritarian regime ultimately to control, and that's a good thing. It's a medium that should be on the side of freedom. But we also have to bear in mind that when we're so reliant on this new medium, it could be used against us. You know, if someone figured out a way to take it away from us and really shut down our whole economy and communications environment, that would be a very bad thing. That's, in a sense, the digital equivalent of a nuclear attack. And so these are all new questions that I think we're just starting to wrestle with. And although new, I think there are elements of them that, this is my theme, you know, have mm-hmm. been with us before and that we can learn from the past.
614-292-8513. If you want to pick up the phone and give us a call and speak with Bill Powers, he's author of Hamlet's Blackberry. You make the point in your introduction in Hamlet's Blackberry that, bottom line, we're always connected because we're always connecting. This is not something that's foisted on us. We have choice.
Yes, I really believe that. And it took me a while personally to even have that thought, because I was going through the last 15 years really feeling that I was on this fast-moving train that there was no getting off of. We just got more and more connected. And I felt myself very powerfully drawn to it. And it did feel, I mean, I wasn't even examining it to the extent I'm about to express, but on a subconscious or unexpressed level, it felt to me that this is my new life and I really don't have a lot of choice. But in fact, every time you go to the screen, you're making a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you do on your screen, on your smartphone, is a decision you're making on some level to do that new task or to add that task to layer these different tasks on top of each other and do what we call multitasking, which I think can be a big mistake. And so those are all things that, in the Emersonian sense, we're deciding to live that way in these times. Is that taking us to the best of times? And I think it's reached a point where in many ways it's not, and it's really smart to take back our lives and really recognize that we are the prime mover here in our own connectedness, and we should embrace that power and do something really creative and positive with it rather than feeling burdened, weighed down. I see people using their smartphones out in public on the street and in airports. They look so much in pain sometimes. It's just, they just have, you know, they literally grimace when they're staring into the thing, and it just does not look like a happy person. Now, of course, I'm just reading their minds. Who knows? But there is a way in which I tweeted a few weeks ago, one of my tweets that really got a lot of response from people on Twitter, I asked the question, are smartphones becoming the new sweatshops? And I really feel that on a certain level, that gosh, we've imprisoned ourselves in these sweatshops. Why? Do we really have to live that way all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the answer is no.
Mike from Columbus's East Side, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the durability of what you see on chat rooms and places like Facebook and so forth. And my son is obviously much more into technology than I am. I'm kind of a Luddite. But what he pointed out to me and what I found fascinating but don't often go there is a site where you're supposed to write a novel in, I think it's like 100 words or something like
140
that.
140 characters on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. And he showed me a couple of those, and I thought, wow, that that is really fascinating, because it definitely brings you back into the process of what exactly are these words other than the cheeseburger was good. But that might be one, too.
Yeah, those are interesting Twitterers or tweeters or whatever you call them out there. It does sort of change, Bill, how we're writing.
It does. You know, I really, really like Twitter. I have to say, I mean, maybe you would think I'd be the last person who would say that, but I think it's wonderful, this idea of the discipline of 140 characters.
Mm-hmm.
And as Mike points out, it really puts you in this very focused mode on, gosh, I really want to get the most out of these 140 characters. How can I do that? How can I really get my message across? It reminds me of my early days in newspaper writing,
mm-hmm.
where they gave you 15 inches for the story and you had to make the most of it. And that was a fantastic lesson. Writers from time immemorial have discovered that limits are good. And so there's a way in which these kinds of sites are really great learning tools. There's one I just stumbled on this week called 750 Words. That's the name of the site.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of it is to get up in the morning or some given time in the day, but the person who created it does it in the morning, and be right on that one page that they offer you and write 750 words and do nothing else but that one task. Focus on those 750 words and go to the end and be done. And the idea that this is a nice way to start the day on one task, thinking about one concept that you're writing about. For a writer, that is really the key to production. But I think it could work for a lot of people, these sorts of rituals. And I get into this in the book, The Power of Rituals and of Limits. They can really open up, paradoxically enough, all kinds of freedom in your life and creativity.
Thank you, Mike, for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
With a background in newspapers as well, Bill, the idea that each Twitter post is like a headline really resonated with me.
It is like a headline, but it's also like the story itself, because when you send out one Twitter message, one tweet, you have to bear in mind that the person who sees that might only see that one, particularly if some of the way it works on Twitter is you have all these followers and they can forward anything you've tweeted to their followers, and they may only pick that one. So if that one gets forwarded to some other person's followers and there's 80,000 of them, which is not that uncommon, and they're all seeing that one tweet, you really want it to say as much as you possibly can. So there's all kinds of tricks for doing that and little shortcuts you can do. And you can, a lot of tweets include links to internet pages, and you can shorten them and so forth. So it's really, I've really enjoyed it, and I just make a point of not being on there all day.
Right.
I check it once or twice and make the most of it.
We have to take another break. My guest is William Powers. He's author of Hamlet's Blackberry, the New York Times bestseller, subtitled A Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. If you have a question or comment for Bill, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Abraham Lincoln freed American slaves through the Emancipation Proclamation, but he didn't always believe slaves should be freed. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with historian Eric Foner about the evolution of Lincoln's ideas.
If there's one element of greatness in Lincoln, it's this willingness to change, not being wedded to a policy once it is proven to have failed.
Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today starting at noon right here on 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins and a conversation with Columbus Dispatch editorial cartoonist Jeff Stoller about the unique world of the humorist and cartoonist. And then also that hour, we'll talk with the Republican candidate for Columbus Mayor, Earl Smith, about his plans for the November election. Join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher beginning at 11 right here on 89.7.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the Central Ohio Trauma System, working with community partners to make Central Ohio a safer place to live. Details about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the Central Ohio Trauma System are at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
It's 35 degrees in downtown Columbus with some light rain. Temperatures falling today. Expect some rain mixing with freezing rain and sleet tonight. There's also a slight chance of snow, a low of 24 degrees. There's a chance of snow for Tuesday and a high of 30. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Our guest this hour is William Powers, author of Hamlet's Blackberry, Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. If you have an idea about how to do that, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Bill, you said that most of us already have been living with a philosophy, albeit an unconscious one, that connecting is good and that the more you connect, the better. So is the book in part trying to wake people up, or do you think people are waking up now? Where do you think we are in this, evolution or devolution or phase that we're in?
I think it is evolution. Let's be optimistic.
Okay.
I think that we are in a questioning moment, a very constructive questioning moment, and I feel that because I think my book has become part of that questioning and that conversation. We have been living by this philosophy that the more connected you are at all times, the better, and it's turning out that it doesn't serve our best and highest purposes, and there's a turn happening. One of the surprises that's happened to me since the book came out last summer is that a lot of the speaking requests I've been getting are from the technology world, from technology companies that are recognizing this is an issue for everyone, and in particular it's an issue for them in their own offices because they have the most connected employees of all, and they've discovered that when someone sitting in a cubicle spends all day toggling from Facebook to Twitter to email to voicemail, etc., they actually don't get a lot done, and they're not bringing their best creative selves to their work. And so some of these companies, for example, Intel, which really helped bring us this revolution, are experimenting with all kinds of ways of reining this in and having people move back and forth during the day between the digital realm and just their own quiet space where they can be thoughtful and creative and interact with people live in person. And that's very, very encouraging, I think. And I love speaking to the people in that world because we tend to write them off, I think some of us, as just in it for the money, and they just want to sell more of these devices and get us to connect around the clock. And it's not true. They're human beings.
Or impossibly addicted to it themselves and unable to see the light.
Yes, they feel it. And they're like us. And that's good. You know, and I think that will help them. Another theme I get into in the book that's a whole other topic, but that I'm fascinated by, is there are ways in which the devices themselves can be improved so they help us rein in our own addictions and our tendencies. And that's also been happening with technologies all through time. And I'm thrilled if they're wanting to do that and help us do that. This week I'm speaking in Washington, D.C. at the D.C. offices of both Google and Facebook. And they are interested in this message as well. It's arguably the two great leaders of this revolution. And so I take that as very good news.
I have it rigged so when I have my tweet deck up on Twitter, it automatically alerts me when there's a post.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I just hate it because it's very irritating, that little ding-a-ling, you know, thing it does. But other times I've gotten incredible news via Twitter, and I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place. I don't know, particularly because I'm in the media business. Do I want to let go of that? Because, you know, when people started Twittering about Egypt, for example, Iran, a year ago last summer, that sort of thing, I wanted to be plugged in.
Yeah, I consciously don't have that feature turned on, Anne, because I want Twitter to be something I'm really in control of and that I only see when I decide to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a decision I've made. It's not for everybody. Yours may suit you better because of, you know, the work you do is different from sitting here writing books like I do, and I really need to not be interrupted much of the day. So I think it's different for everybody, and that's the beauty of it. I also underline in the book that I'm not trying to tell people how to live or design their lives for them, because everybody has to do it to serve their own needs. But I think everybody should be doing it and should be being more thoughtful about it, because you can really go to great places by doing it. In fact, I'm talking to you right now from an office that I rented in the village near my house specifically to get away from the house to be able to focus on the book. And when I installed the phone here that I'm talking to you on, you know, Verizon keeps trying to sell me broadband for this office, and I keep saying no.
Really?
One of the great things about this office is that I only have a landline phone, so I can write. And for my own work life and productivity, that's what works.
And it sounds a lot better on radio, by the way, Bill.
Oh, good, because it's a landline. Yes, I know. Isn't that ironic that we still embrace the landline for this one purpose?
Yes, yes. It's good. It's all good. There was an article in the USA Today earlier this month that mentioned a series of low-tech getaways, five places to get away and unplug. And I was wondering if you're plugging into how popular these kinds of getaways are and, you know, how many have work emails? You know, how many people get by it by having their smartphone with them anyways or
yes.
What?
Yes, I do get into this briefly in the book, because this started some time ago. Some really far-seeing resorts saw this coming and started doing things. There's an island in the Caribbean where if you give them your BlackBerry or iPhone to be locked away in the safe at the front desk for your entire stay, you get a discount on the week you're spending at that resort.
What's in it for the resort? Is it just a gimmick? Or?
I think that they recognize that people see that and think, oh, that's exactly what I need. I want to go to that resort, and I'll save money by getting rid of this thing that on some deep level I want to get rid of. You know, and so I think they realize that people are operating on two levels. They have the addiction, and they also know they want to escape the addiction, and maybe this will help them. And I did see that piece in USA Today, and it's fascinating that there's more of these things. But I think it's meeting a very important human need. And by the way, it's not a new need or a new challenge. In my chapter about Seneca, the Roman philosopher, the ancient Roman philosopher who lived at the same time as Christ, he talks about how people would travel. In ancient Roman times, people who had the money to travel. And I have the quote here. He said he discussed how everywhere they went, they would effectively try to stay connected to their work life. Now, of course, they didn't do it by smartphones, but they did it by other ways, by finding people to talk to about business and so forth. And what a mistake that was. And Seneca says, the man who spends his time choosing one resort after another in a hunt for peace and quiet will, in every place he visits, find something to prevent him from relaxing. And I think that's just what we do when we ask about the Wi-Fi at the resort hotel, when maybe that's the last thing we should be asking about.
And sometimes you think all the stuff you can do at different resorts, and really what you need to do is just sit.
Just sit, just be quiet, just sit on that balcony and enjoy an hour of solitude and reflection. I mean, that's today. How valuable is that? How often do we get to do that?
Yet we don't, as a society, necessarily value that. Or it doesn't feel like we do, at least.
Our economy doesn't value it because it's all about growth and productivity. But as a culture, if you think about it, I think we do increasingly value it. If you think about the explosion of yoga and all kinds of Eastern meditation techniques that have become so popular that you see the ads in the newspapers and all over the place, and celebrities are talking about how that's made all the difference in their lives. So I think there's also a counter trend where we're trying to get back to that because we know how important it is.
614-292-8513. You can give us a call and speak with the guest. William Powers, he's author of Hamlet's BlackBerry, A Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. And Dan from Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm calling with a question. I love the topic, and I heard your first interview with Anne not that long ago.
Last spring sometime, I think.
Very glad to hear that the book is doing so well.
Thank you.
And Just a couple questions. One, you've both mentioned a little bit the addiction aspect, and I'd like for you to go into that a little bit more, and to say, you know, to say in relationship to what all the things we already know about addiction and how hard that is, and how do people know, you know, if they are addicted, what can they do? Are there groups like, you know, the 12-step to help people with this if it is an addiction?
Great question, Dan. Thank you. I think that it's interesting how closely this particular addiction parallels all other addictions. And what scientists are telling us, the research is still very early, but what we're seeing in the earliest studies is that the same thing happens in the brain when we click on an email or hear that tweet deck chime. That happens when we're drawn to alcohol or some other addiction. We get a little reward in the brain, a little dopamine squirt, they call it. So it is a classic addiction in many ways, and I think the ways we deal with it needs to be very parallel to what we've always done.
Great. Well, related to that, you mentioned you were going to speak at Google. I think you said that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I wanted to pass along that I had learned on NPR, on NPR, from listening to, it used to be called Speaking of Faith, now it's called On Being with mm-hmm. Krista Tippett. And they were interviewing Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's a famous author who teaches meditation, and he has spoken with Google folks at Google and on how to meditate.
Yes, you know, I think that it's everywhere, and these people who work at companies like that, as I said, are among the most connected, so they're feeling the need most fervently, really, and it's a wonderful thing that this other point of view, this other approach, this way of, in a sense, counteracting the addiction is really coming to the fore at this moment. You know, another thing that happened, Dan, I don't know if you saw this, is that Arianna Huffington, who's really one of the leaders of this revolution, was carrying 3 BlackBerries until late last year when she tripped and fell while trying to keep track of those 3 BlackBerries and broke her cheekbone. And that was her wake-up moment. That was the moment when she realized that despite how necessary it is for her to be immersed in her digital business all the time, she needs breaks and she needs some gaps. And she got rid of one of the BlackBerries, so now she's down to just 2. but I took that as a breakthrough moment for all of us, really.
That reminds me of that video that kind of went viral of the girl tripping. She was texting and tripped and fell into the fountain at the mall.
Yes, that went viral for the very same reason. That was so. I think people looked at that video and said, "Oh, that's me." You know, in a sense, that's an extreme version of me.
Just one follow-up question, if I might.
Sure.
So again, I think your book and some of these videos and what's happening in the world can very well be a wake-up call for all of us. And I'm just wondering, you know, have you thought about next steps, another book, or just a speaking tour, or you know, what can we do?
Yeah, the book has kept me so busy, Dan, these last 8 months that I haven't had a lot of time to propose the next book yet to my publisher, but I have been thinking about a bunch of themes. What I don't want to do, the one thing I don't want to do is kind of write the same book again, which is what I think a lot of authors who have a book that succeeds sort of fall into that trap. I want to do something that's a little bit different, but also a book that's somehow philosophical, because I think that's what people are hungry for today.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you,
Dan. 614-292-8513. We have a few more minutes left. I'm being told 4 minutes left. So if you have a question or comment for Bill Powers, give us a call or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, but do it quickly so that Bill can respond. Kindles and Nooks are getting more and more popular, iPads, all of that kind of stuff. Books usually work to take you away from the screen. What do you think of the use of technology like Kindles and Nooks, and would this be the sort of technology that we should take a break from as well, just because of the nature of it?
Well, I think in many ways ebooks are a huge part of the future. People are adopting them and loving using them. I think that what we're discovering is that the more that an ebook emulates a traditional book, and really feels like a space apart,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't have emails coming in on the sides and little bells going off and so forth, the more effective it is in taking us to that deep dive, if you will, reading state that is the best kind of reading. So I think there is an evolution happening in that direction, and it's a good thing, but it will take a while for these devices to feel like the way a disconnected book feels, because that's hard for something that's hooked up to the digital realm to do. But they are increasingly that way, where they allow you to download the book and turn everything else off and so forth, and the screens are increasingly peaceful and quiet and even colorful. And I think that's a good thing.
Paul, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. We have about a minute.
Hi, Ann. I'll go really quick.
Sure.
My name's Dr. Paul Grinello, and I actually offer a problematic internet use group. And it's gotten to the point where we're actually breaking the group into subcategories, whether people are having problems with pornography, gambling, gaming, social networking, compulsive shopping, compulsive surfing. So there is quite a range of people out there that have developed obsessive behavior around the use of the internet. So
I love hearing about this, Paul. You know, I'd only heard about people in California who were doing this, which tends to be the leading edge, and I'm glad to know there's someone in the Midwest who's on the same track.
See, Paul, quickly, do you have a website address?
I have a website, sure. It's www.infowellness, all one word, .org.
Okay.
O-R-G.
Thank you for your call.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye.
That is all the time we have, but maybe in a few months when your book goes to paperback, we should revisit, because I think this is just changing so fast. We have to talk more.
It is. Oh, thank you. And I'd love to be back. It is changing fast, and I'll let you know when the paperback's on its way. I'd love to return.
Sounds great. That is author William Powers. He's written Hamlet's Blackberry, a New York Times bestseller. I want to thank him for joining us, and thank you for joining us. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.